This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Over the past hour, we've been talking about last year's insurrection at the U.S. Capitol when militia members, white supremacists, and other supporters of President Trump attempted to block Congress's certification of President Biden's 2020 election victory. A large majority of Republicans still believe the 2020 election was stolen, and they're working to be able to have, I should say elected office holders anyway, are working to be able to have greater control over America's electoral systems in the future. Here to continue our discussion is Kevin Anderson. He's a professor of political science at Eastern Illinois University and the co-author of the book State Voting Laws in America, Historical Statutes and Their Modern Implications. Professor Anderson, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Listeners, our lines are open still, 800-222-9455, if you want to join our conversation. What are you thinking about today, 1 year after the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol? What do you think of what Congress is or is not doing in response to that and what's happening in other states? 800-222-9455 is the number, or you can always tweet us at 21st Show. So you were on our program last November, right after the election, when President Trump was refusing to concede. At the time, you said this was an old, familiar pattern with close outcomes. Can you talk about that, provide some context historically?
Sure. One of the things my colleagues and I wrote about in our book is the fact that democracy creates this sort of a feel for an intense sort of, you know, fight for power. That we think we're electing people to govern and serve the common good, but it, in the back of our minds, you know, it's about power. And so, very often throughout history, you know, looking back to, you know, Illinois' own Abraham Lincoln, the fight for power has been kind of constant. And so I think the thing that's gonna be unique about January 6th is that this might've been the first time in modern history that we saw this play out in the nation's capital in the way that it did. But we've had in 1874 in New Orleans, you had the Battle of Liberty Place, where former Confederates were very upset with the Reconstruction government and basically violently came in and tried to sort of, and basically for I think 3 days, they sort of took control of state government when the Capitol was in New Orleans. Then you had the very infamous Wilmington Massacre in 1898, where once again, the results of an election were contested to the point where there was a violent, you know, sort of incident that occurred there. And as your previous guest, Mr. Alter, made reference to the, you know, Voting Rights March at Selma, there are so many times where an election is grounded in, you know, issues, and we're fighting over funding education or cleaning up the environment. But in an individual level, you've got this kind of fight for power. And sometimes, you know, in political science, there's this the scholars talk about the difference between a party-centered election and a candidate-centered election, where historically party-centered elections, you know, people voted for their party because there were issues that party stood for that were important. But in candidate-centered elections, we tend to, you know, we like that individual candidate, you know, people who liked President Kennedy or President Reagan or, you know, President Obama. And I don't think we'd ever seen a sort of intensely loyal sort of group of supporters that acted out at the national level in the same way that we've, you know, sort of seen that at the state and local level. So it's a very kind of unique kind of moment in our history. And I think Vice President Harris was right that January 6th joins a kind of unfortunate litany of dates in American history, whether it's December 7th, 1941, or September 11th. But it's moments that cause us to reflect on the structure and the nature and the necessity of what a democratic government should be.
Yeah, no one, as you said, the sort of personality driven or individual candidate driven election, no one manning the barricades or breaking down barricades for Bob Dole or Mike Dukakis or anything like that. Can you talk a little more about identity and the idea? I think that, maybe I've seen analysis that suggests people used to say, I'm a Catholic, I'm a Baptist or whatever might be their most salient identity. Now people talk maybe about their political affiliations. And then there's this question of race. And there have been a lot of political science work, books written on the role of white identity in the 2016 election and after. Can you talk about how that's been a factor in what we've seen in the past few years in American politics?
I can, the thing that's interesting is that going back to 2008, when President Obama was elected, there was this very brief moment where everybody said, okay, we're post-racial. Yeah, race doesn't matter anymore. It's an artifact of American history. And I'll tell just a very quick personal anecdote. I remember I was walking on campus and one of my students walked up to me and he said, okay, now that we elected President Obama, we're good, right? That no more racism, God. Everything's good. And I sort of laughed and just like, okay, make sure you do the reading for class and I'll see you later. But what's happened is, and the scholar Heather McGee published a book earlier this year, and I recommend it to those who haven't read it yet, called The Sum of Us, in which she talks about how politics has been reduced to kind of a zero-sum game, that when one group gains something or is perceived to gain something, then another group perceives that they have lost. And so the election of President Obama, the push, his legislative successes with the Affordable Care Act and the killing of Osama bin Laden and these kind of things, it galvanized his political opponents in a way that I don't think people were anticipating. I mean, even people who didn't necessarily buy that we were in a post-racial America, I don't think they thought the reaction was going to be as stridently sort of white nationalist as it turned out to be in some areas. Not all Republicans, reacted that way. And a lot of people had policy differences that were important and nuanced and kind of part of how we do politics. But as President Trump kind of came on the scene, I think he recognized that this kind of zero-sum nature of our politics could be very clearly and simply articulated in this kind of white nationalist kind of language. And from the very beginning, coming down the escalator and, talking about, Mexicans are rapists and shutting down Muslims and all that kind of thing. He was articulating something that in other areas of our politics would have just been normal kind of political divisions. We can have disagreements about immigration, or we can have disagreements about education or what have you, that don't necessarily have to be, focused on race, but it tends to be very, very easy to sort of frame them that way. And once you do that, it becomes kind of weirdly sort of impossible to kind of untangle them. And a lot of the people that were protesting, I thought one of the sort of weirdly kind of unbelievable things about the last year, January 6th, was there never, not during the entire Civil War, had a Confederate flag ever been inside the Capitol. And I remember seeing, that on television and being just sort of stunned, that people were walking through the Capitol. I mean, given everything that was going on, it was sort of odd to me that there was someone walking through waving a Confederate flag. And I'm like, it was so odd, but it was like, that was an assertion of, we're here to reclaim what we've lost. And it's a very it's a very difficult thing for politicians to try and manage today, because even kind of, you know, sort of what we would think of as innocuous kind of stances get sort of politicized and, you know, my camp and your camp. You know, I joke with my students once. I said that I never thought that American politics would become like, you know, sitting with my friends watching the Bears and the Packers. It's like, are you kidding me? Like we can't find middle ground. Don't we all love nachos? And it's like, well, no, I'm not eating that because the Packers fan had that. It's like, oh, geez, you know, it can't be that complicated.
Right. In the few minutes we have remaining, well, let me remind listeners, we're speaking with Professor Kevin Anderson from Eastern Illinois University, who is in political science and an expert in state voting laws. He's written a book, State Voting Laws in America. And can you just talk about, in the time we have remaining, last year after the election, we spoke about President Trump's attempts to take his fight to the states. What's happening now with regard to state voting laws, particularly in Republican-led states?
Well, what we're seeing is, and I have another colleague named Russell Brooker, teaches at the University of Michigan. We had done some research together in what he referred to as the four Mississippi plans that grow from Reconstruction into contemporary times. And initially it was about violence and intimidation. And then secondly, it was sort of legal. So you've got things like literacy test and poll taxes and this kind of thing. And the third Mississippi test was very much things like gerrymandering and changing sort of electoral rules at the local level so that you would get things like at-large elections rather than districts. And so what we're seeing in contemporary times now is a sort of furtherance of that sort of third Mississippi plan. People aren't necessarily turning and saying, okay, we have to galvanize our supporters to turn out to vote to get the policy we want. They're saying we need to galvanize supporters to take control of the mechanisms of democracy. So in my home state of Arkansas, there's lots of changes where people are trying to restrict how much absentee voting can occur. And in Texas, they're limiting things that were put in place to sort of help deal with the pandemic. So things where people could drive by and drop off ballots, and they're limiting the time you can use to mail in ballots. And you're starting to see in some states where there are going to be rules where if an elected official, an election official, in that state perceives that maybe there was something fraudulent happening in a particular district or city or area, they can then sort of throw out those results. And so what you're seeing is just this shift of people saying, the only way for us to sort of correct for fraud is to take control of the mechanisms ourselves. And, you know, the thing that's sort of problematic about this is that a lot of people that are coming in to run for these offices or to work here, they don't have any particular history of involvement in politics to the point that they would be, you know, sort of familiar with how these things have historically operated. So people are changing rules that have been in place for 30, 40, 50 years based on kind of a sort of superficial understanding of how these things work. Mm-hmm. And that's where the fight is going to be, you know, kind of taking place this year and moving forward into 2024.
Well, it's something we will keep a close eye on. Professor Kevin Anderson of Eastern Illinois University, thank you for being with us today, 1 year after the insurrection at the Capitol. And I hope we can talk again soon. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. We're produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Erica Scalise is our engagement producer, and our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. That is it for us this week. We'll be back again on Monday with a live program looking at all the developments with regards to the COVID pandemic, the Omicron variant, and how students are faring. That's coming up on Monday's program. Thank you for listening. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll talk to you next week.